Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Just checking in here. I want to give you some thoughts I have on Hell in a Cell, as well as a few things on Monday Night Raw. SmackDown Live has already concluded, although I haven't watched it yet, so I just want to touch on those items. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can also subscribe to me on Apple Podcasts, and please rate and review me if you have a few moments. It only takes about 10 seconds to do, I promise. And also, I am on Spotify and Spreaker, so if you'd like to follow me on those platforms, you are more than welcome to do so, and it'll be much appreciated. So guys, I don't have a whole lot to talk about. I'm not going to delve into every single match, just some highlights that are in my brain that I wanted to get off my chest from Monday Night Raw and Hell in a Cell. And overall, I really enjoyed Hell in a Cell. I more than I thought I would. I think it was a well-crafted show. The in-ring product was very strong. Even particularly the Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose versus Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. Very, very good match. Even Ronda Rousey and Alexa Bliss, I think, outdid themselves from what was expected versus what the outcome was. Ronda's still green. It shows at times. She has a very different style, but she's trying to also incorporate the WWE style into her already well-established martial arts background, which can be challenging at times. But I think overall they're doing a very good job with her. The match was, I think, well done, and you have Ronda moving on to her next opponent. And beyond that, you had Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton, with Jeff Hardy apparently retiring, having his big bump through the table. Long match, but very good. I didn't hate the match. I never really was really into that storyline. It never grabbed me. It never made me feel real emotion, other than these are two legacy stars. They're trying to really create something out of nothing. And ultimately, I enjoyed the match, but the story never grabbed me because there was no substance to it, if that makes sense to anybody. But moving down the card here, I also obviously enjoyed the main event. Many people didn't, and in some respects, I understand. I wouldn't give it a massive thumbs up, but I would say a slight thumbs up to the main event. What I didn't enjoy was the constant, and I tweeted this out, the constant outside interference. It was about 10% Braun versus Roman Reigns, and 90% all the other shenanigans going on outside the ring with Drew and Dolph and Dean and Seth and the one man that nobody expected to see in Brock Lesnar, including myself. I don't think there was one media outlet, one podcast, one prediction out there that had Brock Lesnar returning to the WWE last night. And I didn't either. I'm not going to pretend to be that guy that saw it coming. I didn't. And having him come back and doing what he did was surprising. I think many of us expected him to just go off and hide in the UFC for the next few months and maybe come back around Royal Rumble time in time for WrestleMania season. But no, we have the triple threat match that WWE loves to throw out there, you know, multiple times every month, it seems like, for championship matches. And you have Brock versus Braun versus Roman at WWE Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia on November 2nd. And here's the problem I have with it, besides it being a triple threat match, which is extremely overdone in WWE and any multi-person match. It doesn't just apply to the women, which have been, the WWE booking team has been repeat offenders on destroying all the women in a match just to get them all on the card, is that Baron Corbin made the match, WWE management, Vince, made the match for the triple threat on November 2nd for the Universal Championship. Last I checked, it's still September. It's September 18th as I record this show. And what that tells me is you can throw all the nonsense at us that, oh, Baron Corbin's going to book himself in a Universal Championship match. Roman Reigns' title's at stake. It's in jeopardy. or whoever the challenger of the week or month is on this road to November 2nd at Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia, what this tells me is that Roman is holding that belt through at least November 2nd and more than likely beyond November 2nd. They've shown their hand here. You can tell me that he's in jeopardy of losing it in whatever situation of the week that he's in, but Roman's belt is going nowhere after Vince McMahon had his crowning moment, at least in his mind, of with Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, and that belt is not being taken off Roman anytime soon. I expect a very long reign with this belt. Unfortunately for us Roman supporters that, well, I should, you know what, I would call myself a Roman heel turn supporter. And I, you know, I'm not going to get on a tangent on Roman. You guys all know what I think about it. But I don't dislike Roman Reigns. I just don't like the role he's in. It's that simple. And I'll leave it at that before I go on a 20-minute rant. So what WWE did is show their hands 7 weeks in advance. It's nonsense. I don't know what they're doing. I know they're trying to promote a show. All these special events that they're having, these international events in Melbourne, Australia, and Saudi Arabia, with the Greatest Royal Rumble and Super Showdown and the Crown Jewel, all of this. They're trying to expand their market internationally. I get it as a business. I get it. I totally understand. But you're also, you know, there's trade-offs with that. Number one, there's oversaturation of WWE events. Pay-per-views, all these special events that aren't the typical part of the WWE calendar of pay-per-views that are just suddenly thrown out there. I mean, all of a sudden they're just having, you know, at least the main audience, the casual viewer doesn't see any of these coming until WWE goes, oh yeah, there's this international event going on in, you know, wherever it may be, Saudi Arabia, Australia, I'm sure they'll go to India, you know, everywhere. And so I get it as a business, but sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming with all of these events going on and sequentially, how do things stack up? And then WWE promotes events that are beyond a event that's actually before the event they're promoting. So, you know, in other words, you'll have Hell in a Cell, but they're actually, when you have Triple H and Undertaker talking about a Super Showdown event that's after Hell in a Cell, but it gets very confusing and hard to follow storylines when WWE does this. I get why they're promoting it so far in advance. They want exposure. They want that brand awareness. They want it to have time to breathe and have a storyline grow from it. I all understand that. It just gets confusing, even for somebody that's been watching WWE since 1997. 21 years I've been watching WWE. As I said, you guys know, or if you haven't heard, now you do know that 21 years I've been watching wrestling, and the first real storyline that grabbed me was Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels at Hell in a Cell, Bad Blood, in October when Kane debuted. That storyline will forever be one of the most nostalgic to me, one of the best. I don't know if it's because it's the first, I don't know, but it grabbed me in a way that just made me a fan forever. And crazy enough, that match could happen again. Probably not inside Hell in a Cell. I can say with all confidence, it probably will not be, and will not be inside Hell in a Cell, but it very well could be at WrestleMania 35 this year, which is crazy to think about. I mean, my God, 21 years ago, and this is a match I'm still talking about possibly happening and being a respectable match. Obviously, they're nowhere near, neither man is near their prime anymore, but both could have a very serviceable match. And Undertaker could say, you know, you made the ultimate sacrifice for me. I'm going to make the ultimate sacrifice in return out of respect. And you will be my final match just as I was yours. And I could see that storyline playing out. And Shawn retires Undertaker. Undertaker retired Shawn. And that could be a ultimate sign of respect by both men, or particularly on Undertaker's side. And that's my early prediction for WrestleMania 35. Why else would Shawn Michaels have had that interaction with Undertaker last week? WWE teasing with Undertaker saying, I will put you down if you came out of retirement. Talking about him being fearful. That's why he's not coming out of retirement. All of this, I think, is leading to a match at WrestleMania 35. But I'm way off tangent on my own tangent. But so other than that, you know, you have Paul Heyman coming out of Monday Night Raw, you know, with that gate to hell that Brock Lesnar kicked in, and Brock Lesnar came in, and he did. He laid waste to everybody. I didn't see it coming. And credit to WWE. I don't think anybody did, and I enjoyed it. I think it was well done, and it added a lot of, you know, it added the surprise element to the match, and I'm okay with it. I think that the fact that Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns were laying there like an atomic bomb hit them for about 10 minutes while all the other shenanigans went on was a little odd, but you know, it did what it was supposed to do, and it continued this feud, and I think it will continue to do so for at least through November, right? Because that's when the triple threat is, probably into Survivor Series. So also we had Daniel Bryan and The Miz. I thought this was well done. I don't think anybody really expected Daniel Bryan and The Miz to settle their differences at this pay-per-view. WWE, I like to think that they're smart enough to continue this feud, and they are. My God, I can't see them cutting the legs off of this one. There's a lot of juice left in this one. And the fact that, you know, Maryse got the pinfall on Brie was a smart decision. It kept a singles match from Daniel Bryan and The Miz from happening again. I think, you know, this will happen probably at the next pay-per-view, take a pay-per-view off and so forth. They'll continue this until The Miz finally gets his ultimate revenge on The Miz. Clean victory, decisive victory, brutal victory. And The Miz tastes defeat in the worst way from Daniel Bryan. And it's going to be at a large pay-per-view, whether it ends at Survivor Series, which I still believe is too soon, Royal Rumble, or all the way to WrestleMania. If they really think they can stretch it that far, it could be done, but they got to be very careful of not overexposing that feud, as good as it is. So I enjoyed it. I think that was a very, it was a well-placed, well-designed match with Maryse getting the victory. And Daniel Bryan is 0-2 in matches against The Miz since this whole program began. And that's fine. I'm fine with that because this is not the end of the story. It's not how it begins. It's not the middle. Everybody remembers the end of this movie, right? So people that are getting frustrated, I mean, come on. If you watch WWE, even for the last like 6 months and you're a new fan, you kind of got the feeling this isn't over with, right? Other than that, one other thing that I wanted to touch on is, you know, this Susan G. This Connors Cures thing that WWE is suddenly just cyclically shoving down our throats because it's Pediatric Cancer Awareness Month. Oh, and don't worry, it's also Hispanic Heritage Month from WWE. They just make up these months to make their sponsors happy. And I'm tired of seeing everyone wear the little Connors Cure badge out of purely optics to make sure that the company looks good in front of their sponsors. And you, every time you turn around, Stephanie McMahon is in some kind of video package hugging some sick kid who has cancer, or you know, handing a check to the Susan G. Komen Foundation or the V Foundation. Or just glad handing and smiling, making sure she's that go-getter brand ambassador to make WWE as soft as possible, and making sure that they follow this PG, soft, philanthropic model that she has developed and created out of this need to make sure that she's as far away from what WWE really is about and what actually made it successful, which is wrestling. My God, did I just say a dirty word or what? Wrestling. If you look at her Instagram feed, she's a McMahon, but my God, you would never know. If you didn't know that she was associated with wrestling, you know, since she was pretty much born, and you just looked at her Instagram feed, you didn't know anything about her, you would have no idea that she is running a professional wrestling company. None. Zero. And everybody can tell me that cancer is a bigger issue than your concern about how WWE presents itself. They are you got to be kidding me that kids' cancer is... No. I would first of all say, take a step back and listen to me. Of course cancer, curing cancer is more important. Of course kids make, kids cures for cancer and supporting the cause is a zillion times more important than WWE wrestling. I get it. My problem is the presentation in which WWE does it to make sure that everybody sees it. When you do something so everybody sees it, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. If this was an article that just popped up on WWE.com, I'm cool with it. But the problem is, even if it's just a, you know, maybe one video package a month or something for a couple minutes that they did, but it's every show and multiple times a show, and everybody, heels and faces, all wear the Connor's Cure badge, and everybody, it makes me sick. I'm tired of it. It's so transparent in the reasoning for it. It's just, I can't handle it. The sponsors and this image of what WWE want themselves to be instead of just embracing what they actually are is what makes me angry, cringe, and grit my teeth every time I see it. Every time I see it, I see Stephanie McMahon's face and just her running away from her true identity, which is, and I don't care what she can say, that she's, no, you're missing the point. This is not about wrestling anymore. Well, guess what? You're running a company that was built on the back of professional wrestling and is still a professional wrestling company, as much as they try to delve into movies and they try to delve into cartoons and alternate TV shows and the E! Network and all of this nonsense side garbage. At your core, you are still a wrestling company, and they are trying to run away from their own identity because they think that they understand how the public perceives wrestling as fake, as, well, we don't want to make too scary of characters. We don't want to say the wrong thing because we're in such a sensitive culture now that nobody can handle even fake things. Okay? People can't even handle fabricated storylines anymore, that everybody takes it personally, and we want to make sure that no sponsors are offended. We don't want to make sure that we can't even say the word violence. They can't even say they're not even supposed to say the word wrestling. They're not even supposed to. Vince McMahon doesn't want his performers to say wrestling anymore in a wrestling company, in a company that has wrestling in its name, World Wrestling Entertainment. It's unbelievably sickening to see this and angry because I come to watch wrestling, not to see the latest heel and babyface, you know, taking selfies and kissy faces and holding hands. And we're friends outside the ring. We just put on a show when the red light comes on. That's what we see on a weekly basis. And my God, it takes the starch out of it. It takes the believability out of it. It takes me out of the moment. So that is my rant for the week, and I'll just kind of keep my voice tone down right now because I have people sleeping. So the only other thing, let's see guys, I'm trying to think about the highlights of Raw and Hell in a Cell. Let's see, you had So at the beginning of the show, you had Roman Reigns come out, and the announcers still are calling him the most polarizing figure. You know, they're taking that whole phrase from what John Cena was covered up with and coddled with by the announcers, saying he's the most polarizing figure when WWE were getting negative reactions to John Cena. But don't worry, they'll say he's polarizing. They'll say he's the big dog. And there's something about Michael Cole saying he's the big dog that just feels so forced. I still feel it's so forced. There's nothing organic about Roman Reigns. Nothing. Zero. He's getting more comfortable on the mic. I'll give him that. But he belongs in a villainous role. But unfortunately, he has given Vince McMahon such an erection with the way that he looks and his nicknames of being the big dog, which I feel like Vince McMahon probably created himself. Even though when Undertaker was the American Badass, he was the big dog, and that name fit appropriately. It did not feel forced, fabricated, or shoved down anybody's throats. It felt real. When you have Roman Reigns come out and Michael Cole just incessantly, is that right? I don't know. It's too late. I probably said that word wrong. It's incessantly. Oh, he says it a lot. See, this is bad. It's 10, almost 11 o'clock at night. I apologize, guys. He says it a lot, and it's getting to the point where it doesn't feel real. It just feels like who calls him that? He calls himself that. Did Stone Cold Steve Austin speak in the third person saying the Texas Rattlesnake is going to whoop your ass? No, he didn't. You have Roman Reigns speaking in the third person on his own nicknames. I don't understand this. Nobody has ever called him the big dog to his face, at least before all of this started. You just had the announcers one day start up this this whole thing, and probably a board meeting came about, and we're like, everybody needs a nickname. You have Monster Among Men. Everybody's got to have a cute little nickname. And when it feels forced, they probably had nothing for Roman other than, well, he's the big dog in the yard, right? Okay, well, let's stick with it. Didn't the Undertaker have that? Oh, Undertaker, nobody remembers anything. Wrestling fans don't remember anything as Vince McMahon logic comes out. And so anyway, I'm getting on my bandbox, guys, but he comes out to a negative reaction. Mostly, I'd say 75% boos, and they try to find the one, you know, 8-year-old little boy in the crowd with the, you know, the I Love Roman or Roman Empire sign, or they find that little girl in the crowd with her mom that doesn't know any better and just goes, he's cute. I like his hair and his eyes. Isn't he so tall, dark, and handsome? That's why I like him. Or you have the same logic with little girls or the little boys who go, that's my hero because he has a move called the Superman Punch, and I know who Superman is, and he's a real-life Superman. I think that's the logic behind this. There's no other reason for any adult male to cheer this man. None. 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 So that's all I have for you guys today. I wanted to check in. Overall, I think, you know, right now it's heading into the Super Showdown. Triple H and Undertaker is clearly the main event of this show. I'm looking forward to it. I don't expect a knock-it-out, drag-out, 5-star match. I expect this to be a slow-paced, high-impact, to-the-point, great in-ring psychology, also a setup for WrestleMania 35. We will see hints of that as well, and I'm really looking forward to it way more than I ever thought I would of a Triple H Undertaker match at this point in their careers, and a match that really came out of nowhere, that they really have done a great, great job of promoting, of both guys coming out and cutting promos, no physicality, which I like at this point. And so props to both guys, props to WWE for that as well. So that's all I got for right now, guys. Thank you for joining me. I will be back, as always, covering Raw and SmackDown next week. So until then, guys, take care.